Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Netflix series 13 Reasons Why is the story of Hannah, a teen who leaves behind boxes of cassette tapes for the 13 people she says contributed to her decision to take her own life.
Get a snack. Settle in. Because I'm about to tell you the story of my life. More specifically, why my life ended. And if you're listening to this tape, you're one of the reasons why.
Critics say the series glamorizes teen suicide, and psychologists have warned that its graphic depictions could exacerbate the rate of teen suicide, the second leading cause of death among teens in the United States. Coming up, we'll hear from two specialists in teen mental health and suicide prevention. Blogger and founder of the nonprofit Media Impact and Navigation for Teens, Alexa Curtis, wrote an article for Rolling Stone about the glamorization of suicide in 13 Reasons Why. She joins us now by phone. Welcome to the show, Alexa.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
What works in this series for you?
Yeah, for me in this series, what works the best is the overall mission that I think 13 Reasons trying to present, which is young adults talking. Everybody's talking about the show, both good and bad things. And at the end of the day, if somebody watched the show and feels like they can finally talk to a therapist or a parent, that's really all that matters, so that they know that suicide is not the way out.
I haven't watched the entire series. I've watched the first four episodes. And so I'm not in any position to create a spoiler, but wow, high school looks pretty bleak in this show.
High school is terrible. And I mean, they really,
by the way, Alexa, you're 19, right? So you're pretty much fresh from the farm, right? Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I watched the show and honestly felt like I was back in high school. Some of the stuff hit so close to home for me. And it's a lot of the same stuff that young adults are going through. So they did a really great job showing what high school is, especially so that parents know what kids are going through.
The show also depicts suicide graphically, apparently. Mm-hmm. And that the whole lead up to that is glamorizing it. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so I wrote an article for Rolling Stone about a week and a half ago, and it went kind of viral. I was one of the first people that watched the show and thought that it was glamorizing teen suicide. At the beginning, everybody was like, this is such a great show. This is such a great depiction of high school and mental health and social media. And as I watched it, I was just thinking, if I was back to my 13-year-old self watching this, I would think suicide was the easy way out. And that's why I took a risk and was like, you know what, everybody's going to hate me, but I'm going to write that I think it's glamorizing teen suicide. And over the past week and a half, all of these people and these mental health experts and people in the media agree with the fact that it's, in a way, glamorizing teen suicide and that it's really not a suitable show for most young, fragile adults.
Is it just that it glamorizes teen suicide, or what is your thoughts about the depiction of it? Not the graphic depiction of the actual suicide, act of suicide, but of the events leading up to it. What's glamorizing about that?
Yeah, so for me, the term glamorizing, I kind of wish I had used a different term because mm-hmm. it's not the best one to use. Really, the situation with the show is that it's bringing more attention. It's bringing more drama. And obviously, it's a TV show, but it's bringing more drama to this girl versus showing the real downside of when somebody commits suicide. And the fact that she's living on through these tapes, she doesn't actually die. So I think that's where the glamorizing part of it comes on. There's so much drama and anticipation and almost excitement that she's dead. But in real life, that's not what a suicide is.
And also the idea of leaving behind those tapes, that entire act of that, it seemed, number one, like a heck of a lot of work. And it required a lot of forethought and creativity. You know, obviously, this is a TV show. It's not real life. But tell us about your experience, why you started your organization as far as suicide goes, and what you know about what this is depicted in 13 Reasons Why.
For sure. So when I was in high school, I just endured severe bullying, and watching the show just brought all of these feelings back to me. And I think had Hannah not have left these tapes, it would have given young adults a better idea of what harming themselves can do. When you leave 13 tapes for 13 people, you can't blame anybody for your problem. And watching this show, I know you mentioned you haven't seen it, but watching...
Well, I've seen four episodes, yeah.
Okay, but the ending part of it, yeah. I don't know, there's one section in it where these two kids kind of just stop being friends with Hannah. And I think that that's something that every young adult has. All friendships, you know, kind of fizzle out or break up a lot in school.
Mm-hmm.
And for her to blame those two kids for one of the reasons she committed suicide, I mean, they're all just young adults trying to find themselves. And now it's like, you know, watching this, if I had had that breakup with my girlfriend when I was younger and it was a terrible experience, I might have thought, oh, I'm going to go kill myself and blame it on them, even though it's really not their fault. They're all too young to see what the downside of, you know, the bullying and the meanness can bring.
And anyways, as I was reading it, and I don't know if it was in your article or another one I read about this, kids and people who are in that suicidal and in that phase and that stage in those moments, they don't think necessarily in terms of blaming people. They think they're just not valuable enough to hang around.
Exactly. They just think that way. And so there's so much that goes on behind the scenes when these situations occur, and especially the situations that Hannah had. And the show just doesn't accurately show. It doesn't show what goes on when somebody's depressed and being bullied and stuff.
What is your feelings about how adults are depicted in the show?
It's really interesting. I mean, there's a part of the show that has a counselor that doesn't report Hannah's rape. I think that was also very poorly executed, because I think a lot of young adults have either been sexually assaulted or seen a sexual assault occur. And I think that when Hannah was so traumatized and she didn't want to report it, I think a lot of young adults can relate to that part, which is great. But when they see her go and finally say something to the counselor and the counselor doesn't do anything, there is a small percentage of school counselors out there who would not report basically a cry for help, which is what Hannah did. And again, young adults are going to see that and think that they have witnessed a rape, they've been sexually assaulted, and they can't report it. And then they're going to go and harm themselves. So I think the parent side of the show was really accurate, what the parents were dealing with and how, you know, you don't always see the signs when a young adult is very depressed. But my concern is that school part, that wasn't accurately represented.
We also saw how the negative impact of the social media on the situation.
Yeah.
What is your sense about that? I mean, there was that real classic, now classic, I mean, it's probably only been like 4 years, but the classic
yeah.
thing where everybody's phones start pinging and they're all getting the mm-hmm. same picture at the same time.
Exactly. I know I forgot just now to answer your other part of that question, but that's why I started my nonprofit called Media Impact and Navigation for Teens, which is a panel in schools on social media and mental health with topics to overcome and battle a lot of the stuff that you see in the show. And we have a very heavy emphasis, and a lot of schools ask us to talk about sexting. And that's what was shown in the show, is the power of one innocent picture, how it can really ruin a girl's life. Again, that doesn't mean she should go and kill herself, but you see how that one picture that went around and that boy was just trying to be funny and all this stuff happened. And it was just a punch to everything about her. And it gave really kids a reason to make fun of her. And that's the stuff that goes on in school nowadays. And kids need to be educated about the power of social media and how to use it positively and not in a negative sense.
You know, we've been talking about sexting and social media and these kind of challenges, you know, it seems like for about 3 or 4 years now, seriously, how do you think it's going? I mean, how do you think kids are responding to it? Ultimately, if it's not reaching them, it doesn't matter. I'm worried
exactly.
about it, but I'm not 16 years old.
Yeah, I think it's great to hear other adults though getting involved and talking a lot about 13 Reasons Why. But I found that over the past week and a half, there's so much press, which has been great. I mean, Selena Gomez, you know, helped produce the show, and mm-hmm. she's getting a ton of press. But who's really talking to these kids directly? These kids are seeing stuff and they're watching it, and adults are writing about it. But who in schools is talking to kids right now about what they saw on the show, how it's affecting them, how the internet affects them? So you can bring a bunch of press to something, but again, overall mission is to get kids to start talking. And if schools aren't taking the time right now to talk to them, what's really the point of this show?
And it is the end of the school year, and then they'll be gone for the summer.
Exactly. And then all these situations will come up again in September, and there'll be a new show, and it'll just be a circle, a really negative circle going around.
Yeah, you wrote that we have to approach the topic of suicide as a society if we want to see progress. What did you mean by that? How could the show have done it differently in that way?
Definitely. Well, I think it could have made that counseling scene. I think that would have been really impactful.
But that would have changed the whole trajectory of the story.
It would have, but again, it would have been less dramatic, but helped a lot of teens who were watching. And I think that is the overall goal of the show. Mm-hmm. Even if it does glamorize, it is to help teens. And had those counselors gotten together and the parents gotten involved, that is bringing it in as a society. That's the, even if it wasn't the counselor necessarily reporting it, it could have been a different scene of all of them sitting down, a group of parents at a PTA meeting sitting down and saying, you know, straight out, we have an issue with the internet. How can we help young adults tackle it? And that wasn't shown. And that's what needs to be done in real life and in a show like this.
Is there something inherent, though, in that teen-parent relationship that teens don't distinguish between what's really important to keep from your parents and what's not really important to keep from your parents and vice versa?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much secrecy and so many secrets and insecurities when you're in that end of high school to end of middle school to beginning of high school period. Mm-hmm. And that's when a lot of these teens are trying to find themselves and they're dating for the first time and they're seeing things on the internet for the first time. And it really depends on how the parents bring you up. I mean, in Hannah Baker's situation, I think her parents were very loving, honest, open people, but it was Hannah's responsibility to talk to them about what she was dealing with. And for some reason, she didn't feel comfortable enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why at a young age, if you can start implementing these very important key things about the internet, about mental health and social media, even starting at age 3, I think that that'll help a lot of young adults feel more comfortable talking to their parents.
Besides Hannah, at least the episodes I've seen pretty much revolve around this one kid, kind of a goody two shoes, kind of a kid that she worked with at a movie theater. And I thought that was an interesting way to do it, because that's propelling me, if I were to go on and watch the rest of the show, is propelling me more than anything, trying to figure out what did he have to do with it. He was one of the recipients of the tapes. He keeps asking the question, I didn't do anything. I don't know what I liked Hannah. I never did anything to her.
Yeah.
A lot of people, and I have a feeling it's going to have something to do with people who stand by and watch.
Yeah, exactly. I think that that's a great topic you bring up. His name's Clay. Mm-hmm. And I think that everybody is either the Hannah Baker or the Clay. And I think that 13 Reasons Why perfectly pinpointed. I mean, I could tell you a bunch of boys in my high school who were the Clay and, you know, the girl never gave them the chance and they really liked them. And I think that was really shown well. And I think it also, though, on a negative side, shows how you never know what somebody's dealing with. There's no way that Clay could have known that Hannah was dealing with these things. Again, I mean, in general, statistically, boys are mentally younger than girls. And, when they're 17, I think they're mentally 5 years younger. So how would a boy like Clay know what Hannah was dealing with or know how to approach it? He wouldn't. He's dealing with his own insecurities. And that was a big part for me watching the show, is knowing that there's so many Clays out there and they almost might just cover up now even more because they're going to be so scared of what admitting their feelings would be. Mm-hmm. But I think that it did definitely really portray what a lot of high school relationships are with boys and girls.
Well, Alexa Curtis, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Alexa Curtis wrote an article for Rolling Stone about the glamorization of suicide and 13 Reasons Why. That's what we're talking about today. She is the blogger and founder of the nonprofit Media Impact and Navigation for Teens. You can check out her article at a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. More coming up. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Netflix series 13 Reasons Why has sparked controversy for its portrayal of teen suicide. Critics claim the show glamorizes what is the second leading cause of teen death in the United States. And psychologists have warned that its graphic depictions could contribute to more cases of suicide among young people. Already, every day, 5,000 teenagers attempt suicide in the United States. If you or someone you know is in crisis, thinking about it, call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255 or visit suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Joining us now is clinical psychologist in behavioral health and suicide prevention coordinator for the Center for Suicide Prevention and Research at Nationwide Children's Hospital, Dr. John Ackerman. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
And licensed professional clinical counselor and program manager at the Ohio State University Suicide Prevention Program, Dr. Matthew Follin. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ian.
Dr. Ackerman, you've seen that you both of you have seen the entire program, all the episodes of 13 Reasons Why. What's your takeaway from it, first of all, Dr. Ackerman?
I think my takeaway is that there's a story that's very engaging. It's attractive to young people, and it tells a story about suicide, but not the story that really rings as authentic or rings as something that can provide hope or resources to young people in a way that can move this issue and this narrative forward.
I was surprised that each episode wasn't complemented with a national hotline number or something like that. That there wasn't more kind of a clinical look and take to this. What about you, Matthew Follin?
I think the show obviously gets people talking about issues that are important to talk about. The key is that we don't have to talk about this in a way that violates some of the guidelines for safe messaging. We can have this conversation in a manner that's both compelling to young people and also that is in line with some of our national standards around how to talk about this. And two of the key areas are sending the message that suicide is preventable and that mental health treatment is effective. And unfortunately, both of those criteria are pretty nebulous throughout the show. It's not clear that Hannah's suicide is preventable. In fact, it seems almost inevitable the way that it's characterized. And the interactions that Hannah has with mental health professionals and other adults in the show are at best negligent and at worst just downright pretty bad.
A total fail. Mm-hmm. It doesn't show a success. It shows a complete fail. And there are successes out there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say that one of the things that could have happened in this story is showing that there are adults, instead of being out of touch, that are able to connect with young people, that we have treatments that work for depression and suicide, that we have prevention programs in schools that work. And I know that Matt is involved in them and we're involved in them in Columbus schools. And so I think we want to make sure that folks know that absolutely there are ways that individuals can master crisis, and actually showing depictions of individuals dealing with a crisis such as thinking about suicide is something that we can empower young people to know that there are examples of hope, and that does reduce suicide risk among young people instead of increasing it as the show may do.
Teen suicide is the second leading cause of death among teens in the United States. That's what we're talking about today in light of the new show on Netflix. It's entitled 13 Reasons Why. If you have a question or comment for my guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And remember, if you or someone you know is in crisis, call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255 or visit suicidepreventionlifeline.org. My previous guest, Alexa Curtis, is a blogger, founder of the nonprofit Media Impact and Navigation for Teens. And is likewise critical of the show, but she says it does depict high school life pretty accurately, which was sort of kind of horrifying for somebody. And I was wondering about the whole issue of that. And is that really what's going on? I mean, obviously, neither of you are in high school, so you can only get secondhand information on it. But what do you make of that? I mean, Dr. John Ackerman, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, I would say that certainly there are instances of bullying, of sexual assault, of individuals struggling with mental health issues. And this is something that is we do see, probably not at the frequency or intensity that's all wrapped up into this story. And
yeah.
I think the issues that a lot of teens are there for each other in ways that aren't depicted in this show as well. So it's concerning. We do need to have these discussions. But as Matt said, we don't need to have them in the context of inappropriate or unnecessarily graphic conversations.
Yeah. Matt,
Sure. You know, my primary context is a college campus.
Yeah. Is not dissimilar, particularly in those early years.
No, certainly. And I think it's, you know, we're constantly walking this fine line of trying to have constructive community dialogue about issues that are very real and that we want to bring out of the shadows, but at the same time, not inadvertently giving the sort of sending the message that a particular way of dealing with them is the only alternative. There are many people who face the things that Hannah faces in the show who go on to have healthy and happy lives because of resilience and because of the way that they're able to access treatment. And so while we don't want to diminish the very real struggles that Hannah's character faces and that, you know, many high schoolers and college age students face, we also want to create this counter-narrative where people do go on to be hopeful and resilient because of the help that they're able to access.
What is it about teens that make them so vulnerable? Is it as simple as maturity, or is there something chemical going on, John Ackerman?
So I think teens, and specific to suicide risk, are more vulnerable to identifying with other individuals who are maybe the same gender, have similar qualities. With regards to this show, that these very charismatic characters may actually increase the identification with these individuals. They're also sometimes dealing with a lot of changes, dealing with a lot of emotional distress, and they are still learning how to regulate these emotions, these thoughts around them, and understanding that sometimes feelings of deep emotional pain will resolve over time, helping them understand that they may be in this spot where they feel like things are not going to get better. They feel like things are constricted and they can't see another way out. And therefore, they're in this period of crisis with no knowledge that it can get better or will get better. So we need to provide some support during crisis and then make sure that once they've gotten through these periods of time, they understand that they can manage this pain.
In one episode of the show, a kid's tearing down posters. They've put posters up around the school about suicide prevention and there is help and hotlines and that kind of a thing. And a kid's tearing them down saying it doesn't matter if you don't deal with the root causes of what is causing the distress in the first place. They're talking about the wrong thing, he says.
Yeah, we know that that peers have significant influence on one another. And so one of the things that we try to think about is how do we leverage that influence, that peer-to-peer influence, and get the students talking about constructive ways of dealing with stress or constructive ways of dealing with suicidality. So in contrast to having what may be in the show depicting sort of the adult approach, you know, let's get help, let's do it this way, and then students sort of countering that with, you're not really listening to what's going on with me. One of the things that we've tried to do is to empower students themselves to learn about, to really do a deep dive on suicide prevention approaches, and to empower them to then be the voices to their peers about how to deal with the challenges of life effectively.
What's your sense about, Dr. Ackerman, about what type of impact a show like 13 Reasons Why has on young teens and young adults? They're going to watch it. Like I said, I was surprised there were more messages with hotline numbers and stuff, because if you're already depressed and thinking about it, I wouldn't be wanting to watch that show, or I shouldn't be watching it.
I would agree with that. And I think what we know about the individuals who are most at risk are the kids who are vulnerable to depression, who have had suicidal thoughts, who have dealt with trauma in their past. And I think when you put a show out there and you think that depicting it in the most graphic, painful way possible is going to deter individuals from engaging in suicidal behavior, as the show creators have suggested, you are missing the point. It doesn't work that way. You're more likely to trigger those who are at risk and more likely to have people see that as a potential option. So what we want to do is make sure people understand that suicide contagion, which is the term about increasing suicide risk, is a real event. When you show graphic methods, when you simplify the cause of death or portray suicide as a mystery or inevitable, those are things that do not help. So I think although we have a conversation going on, which we would love to have with or without some of these aspects of the show, it's not in a way that necessarily starts the conversation about how do we help? How do we let peers be empowered, as Matt was saying? That is absolutely what we want to do and figure out how to move forward with the second leading cause of death among young people.
As far as empowering peers, it seems like the kids who are putting up the posters are always the, you know, the class president or the, you know, the kids that are already, they don't really get it either. That's not one of their issues. They care, but they don't get it.
What we found at Ohio State is that many of the students who want to be involved with suicide prevention efforts on campus do have a unique personal story connection to the issue.
So maybe that changes at the college level
a
little
bit.
They step into a new set of shoes and they can try something different.
Yeah, and I think at the college level what we see is that students want to be the leaders of having this community dialogue. They don't want just information sort of spoon-fed to them. They want to be able to think critically themselves about what's going on and what the needs of their fellow peers are. And so being able to identify students who can think through some of these issues and talk about suicide prevention appropriately. You know, for instance, this year we were able to train 4,000 people on campus around suicide prevention.
4,000 students?
4,000 students, staff, and faculty.
Okay.
Educating them about warning signs, what to do if you're concerned about a friend, how to reach out to people. And students have been champions for this. They have created additional events, a mental health fair that had 1,200 people in attendance, a 5K to raise awareness about suicide prevention on campus. And having students be the face of this has broken down some of that stigma, not only the stigma around mental health, but the stigma around, you know, what do the adults know about this, you know, when we're really going through something. It turns out that the students who can talk to their peers and translate these messages to their native tongue do an incredible job of getting people to dialogue about the very real things that are happening. And some of the very issues that, you know, Hannah Baker faces in the show.
Yeah.
And I would add to Matt's comment about empowering students and your comment about finding the gaps where individuals who haven't typically been served,
that is
a direction that we need to go. You're right. Just targeting school leaders who are already successful, who are already socially and civically engaged, we need to go beyond that. There are some emerging groups and other programs that really specifically target individuals who are at risk, whether you're talking about LGBTQ groups. There's a group that I met at a recent conference called it's called Suck It Suicide, and really target individuals who have who are sort of counterculture, who are individuals who are not within the mainstream. And so when we go to schools, and I think in the past year and a half, we've provided suicide prevention education to about 13,000 kids and about almost 2,000 faculty in area schools, because that's our mission, to get this word out. And then we really want to start engaging schools and those kids who are on those margins and don't have the same support.
There was another aspect that came up. Again, I only watched 4 episodes of the show, but there was a lot in these programs. There was a lot to talk about. And one of them was the reaction of the school. It got to be a legal issue. The school was more worried about, they immediately started talking about media coverage and people are starting to talk about this and it doesn't look good for us. And they seem to take that tack. And I've heard of that before. That seems pretty authentic, that schools have to start worrying. I suppose on one level they are worrying about the contagion issue, you know, but on another level they're more worried about the PR. And is that misplaced, or is that part of the whole thing? I mean, with Ohio State, Matt Follin, I mean, is that part of it?
I think any time there is a concern like this, you know, we know that suicide is the second leading cause of death for college-age students as well. We know that there are you know, there's complex issues at play. You know, we have to think about trying to ensure that students don't come into the campus community assuming that this is something that happens all the time, because it doesn't happen all the time. It's something that, you know, as much as we want to talk about suicide prevention, as much as we need to talk about it, it is still a relatively rare event that, that takes place. And so, yeah, you know, there are many different factors at the administration level, at the faculty level. One of the things that we try to do is make sure that everyone on campus buys in to the idea that suicide prevention is a shared responsibility. It's not just the job of the mental health professionals on campus. And in fact, we know by you know, virtue of talking to our students that the majority of them will turn to a friend, a classmate, before they ever get step foot in the counseling center. And so that's another reason why it's so vital to equip peers on campus to make sure that they're aware of what to look for, and that way they can appropriately reach out.
We're talking about the depiction of suicide in the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why. It's on the air right now. My guests, Dr. John Ackerman, clinical psychologist and behavioral health and suicide prevention coordinator for the Center for Suicide Prevention and Research at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Also, you just heard Dr. Matthew Fullen. He's a licensed professional clinical counselor and program manager of the Ohio State University Suicide Prevention Program. If you have a question or comment, if you have something to contribute to this conversation, please give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you're a teen, a young adult, want to talk about what 13 Reasons Why is getting right and what it's getting wrong, we want to hear what you have to say. You can also check us out on Facebook, and you can tweet us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the portrayal of teen suicide in popular culture in light of the new Netflix show, 13 Reasons Why. Critics claim the show glamorizes teen suicide, and psychologists have warned that its graphic depictions could contribute to more cases of suicide among young people. It's already the second leading cause of death among young adults, teenagers and young adults. 5,000 teenagers every year in the United States attempt suicide. If you or someone you know is in crisis, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255, or you can check out the website at suicidepreventionlifeline.org. And if you don't feel like doing that right now, you can check out the links on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Still with us is clinical psychologist and behavioral health and suicide prevention coordinator for the Center for Suicide Prevention and Research at Nationwide Children's Hospital, Dr. John Ackerman. Also is licensed professional clinical counselor and program manager of the Ohio State University Suicide Prevention Program, Dr. Matthew Fullen. John Ackerman, should parents be watching 13 Reasons Why, and should they be doing it with their teens?
I definitely think parents should be aware of this. We wrote a blog on the on our website at Nationwide Children's Hospital to let folks know that there is a decision to be made whether you feel like your child is vulnerable and should watch it at all. But a lot of kids we know have already watched it.
They did the binge thing, and yeah,
and lots of parents, even of counselors and therapists that I know, when I talk to them about this show, their children had already watched the show in its entirety.
Yeah.
So really, we are focusing on messaging, having positive conversations, talking about what the show did right, what it really failed to do well, and to make sure that individuals are willing as a family to discuss depression, suicide, what are the warning signs, and talk directly, asking a question as simple as, have you ever thought about killing yourself? That does not put the idea in someone's head. It actually invites a conversation that will allow them to potentially get them some support or make sure it's in the air.
Just to think about it or admit you thinking about have thought about it is kind of taboo, right?
Sure. And, you know, I think part of what's going on culturally is that for so long it was taboo to talk about suicidality at all.
Yeah.
And so now in some ways, perhaps the pendulum has swung to the other extreme where we're starting to have these conversations, which we're happy about, but we're having them in ways that are not ideal. And so, you know, to be able to, as John said, to be able to encourage folks to be honest about the things that they're facing, and then to train other people who are part of their community to know how to respond. So when a person brings up suicidality, to not dismiss that, to not assume that they're not being serious about that, to not assume that it's attention-seeking or anything like that, but to take every sort of indication of suicidality seriously and to communicate hope to that person and ultimately try to help them access treatment.
Dr. Eckerman, you wrote that the progression of Hannah Baker's suicidal behavior in 13 Reasons Why wasn't plausible. Can you tell me what worked and what didn't, or why not?
Yeah, the story is based on her creating 13 separate tapes to identify reasons why others let her down, in essence. And so typically when a person's in a suicidal crisis, they're in deep emotional pain. They're feeling like a burden to others. They're not typically trying to lash out or guilt trip other people, as in these tapes. It would have taken her several days to create these tapes. And the way she weaves them together in sort of a murderer mystery format definitely sensationalizes this issue. She's speaking at that point basically from beyond the grave, inducing guilt in all of her peers, which Matt and I were talking before. This is sort of an adolescent fantasy for a lot of people, the idea that a person could
kind of going to your own funeral sort of a thing and knowing how people are going to be responding.
That's what it is.
And controlling that.
She's basically written a 13-episode suicide note that is really against what we would hope to portray an adolescent going through crisis.
It's not a nice thing to do, and it's also an unlikely thing that would occur.
I think it's manipulative in a lot of ways, and she's portraying the stereotype or the myth that individuals who are struggling with suicide are selfish. We really want to get away from that. They're feeling like a burden. They're in deep emotional pain. They are not necessarily choosing death. They're choosing an escape from pain. And so by having her as this sort of puppet master, you really get the sense that she's not necessarily a character who's in pain. She's kind of glib, sarcastic.
Yeah.
It's not consistent with the individuals, the many wonderful individuals who I've treated who have struggled with suicide.
Hmm. There are media guidelines on suicide. What do we know about those? I mean, I never really knew there were media guidelines.
Yes, in terms of news reporting on a suicide death, there are clear standards and guidelines. In terms of, you know, educating TV and film producers about this, you know, the things that you want. So ideally, the things that would be emphasized in a show like this one, you would emphasize help-seeking behavior, and that help-seeking behavior would be effective. The interaction between Hannah and the school-based counselor was pitiful, and you know, unfortunately, can send the message to young people that that's not a viable option. You want to send the message that, you know, there are people struggling with suicidality who choose to keep going, who choose to sort of turn the other direction and look for resources. Interestingly enough, there was a rap single released just in the past few weeks by the rapper Logic. The name of the song is 1-800-273-8255. Which is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number. And in the lyrics of the song, it's sort of this back and forth between an individual who's calling a suicide hotline, considering ending his life, the response of the person on the hotline, talking with that person, engaging empathically with that person, and then ultimately the protagonist in the song ends the song by saying, "I finally want to be alive. I finally want to be alive. I don't want to die today. I don't want to die." And while that's compressed into this 4-minute song, it's entertaining, it's good musically, and it sort of encapsulates a story of a person who's struggling, seeks help, and then ends up choosing to remain alive.
Yeah, that's a great aspect of what we can do with media. Media definitely has the power to shift the narrative and make sure that we're doing this really well. You mentioned media guidelines. We actually just recently put out updated media guidelines for the state of Ohio. We were provided a grant by the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services to update the current media guidelines and to include aspects of social media. So we really spent a lot of time recently thinking about how journalists could do this really well. And we ended up doing six workshops at major Ohio universities, including Ohio State and several other major universities. We partnered with the Scripps School of Journalism at OU to really help make sure that we are emboldening journalists to do this really well. And I think that's part of this. As Matt said before, this takes a community effort. It's going to take media doing this well. It's going to take pop culture doing this well and folks with boots on the ground doing it well.
How do we get in front of or alongside of the social media aspect of this? Because it's not the social media is not going away. It's not petering out. It's just it's like shape shifting. Every year, almost, from Facebook to Twitter to Snapchat to who knows what going down the line. I mean, it's kind of crazy. How much does that play into this, do you think, Matt Follin, in the end?
You know, we wrestle with this. On one hand, you see social media as a way for unhelpful messages to proliferate very quickly. And so that's something that makes all of us a bit nervous in the suicide prevention community. You know, we see folks who may publicize certain aspects of what they're going through or even suicide notes and things like that. On the other hand, you know, I think a theme from today's dialogue is that you can't always control how suicide is brought up in community discourse, but you can be proactive about framing the discussion so that you're helping steer people toward life and toward hope. And so being able to use social media as a means of educating the public about suicide prevention strategies, again, enlisting peers to be actively engaged on Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and such, to be able to reach out to people who are struggling, trying to, you know, use those different forms of media to, you know, to make a difference for good. There's smartphone apps that are out there that are all about suicide prevention. Ohio State has one. Many other organizations have them as well that can help individuals just, you know, with one click of their smartphone, access a suicide prevention hotline, access resources about how to help a friend. So we just have to roll with these things and continue to be innovative about how we educate the public.
I have two emails from a couple people. One that doesn't like how the show worked and another one who thinks that they relate to it and they get what they're trying to do. Email from Brad says, I think it's hard to fathom why a group of adult TV producers would find it necessary to depict and market this sort of program to an audience of probably teenage viewers. I have not seen the show, but its description seems to give real life kids a roadmap for stopping whatever pain they're experiencing. There's so much more to life than high school. There should be some balance to show how all the things that the girl in the show went through was only a short phase in her life. I don't get it. And then we have an email from Allie. She writes, I attempted suicide 7 years ago, right before I was supposed to graduate high school. I related to this show immensely, and I think it is doing some things right. Yes, it is making us talk about suicide, and yes, it has made all of those whom I know rethink what one says and does because you never know how it will affect someone. What the show doesn't do is show the options for help. I'm healthier mentally than I've ever been, but this show reminded me of every reason why I attempted suicide. Wow. Mm. Thank you so much for that. Those emails, appreciate it. The progression of suicidal behavior, can we talk about that a little bit? Very early on, one of the things that's brought up in this communications class in this high school, this fictional high school, is change of behavior. That people change. They cut their hair. They start wearing a lot of makeup. They stop wearing makeup. They do something drastic to the way they look. What do we know about why that is? And of course, the way you look is everything in high school.
Yeah, I think one of the warning signs that we talk about in terms of emotional changes and behavioral changes are shifts in a person's personality, how they're taking care of themselves, what they're bringing to the people around them, whether they're isolating. And not every, it's important to show that not every situation shows itself in the same way. It's not always obvious. We certainly want people to be proactive in reaching out because it can look different. But the progression is something that we want people to be able to pay attention to. And I think that's why we want to make sure that those who are closest to these kids, those who see them a lot, are able to talk about these questions, notice them, acknowledge they see something different, whether or not they're mental health experts or not, to show that they care, show that they do have a concern. And if that concern is something they're willing to discuss, it can be brought up in a more formal way, with whether it be counseling or other resources. But each person may have their own safety net and their support. So we want to make sure that that we don't stay silent about this. We've certainly been silent about it for too long. And we want to make sure that this is in the public consciousness.
And as far as if you think somebody's suicidal, a lot of people are very tentative about reporting that. What do they do?
Sure. You know, a lot of folks think that they will either, you know, embarrass the person by bringing it up. They might think, you know, I'm sure there's someone else there out there who's more qualified to have this conversation than I am. Surely, you know, people want to believe that the warning signs they may be seeing are not actually warning signs, because that's very distressing for the observer as well. So one of the things that we try to do when we provide trainings on campus is to, you know, provide an outline of some of these warning signs, and then really to do some motivational interviewing with our participants, help them to identify how important it is to engage their peers and to ask a very simple but blunt question. You know, are you thinking about suicide? If there's someone that they're concerned about, it's important to be able to ask that question. We'll have people role play asking that to try to gain a little bit of comfort with it. We also let them know that this is inherently an awkward conversation, so embrace that. Just know that it's going to be difficult to ask about this, but it's so important that you do so. We also consistently will have people ask about social media and how, you know, how do we use that to engage with people. Mm-hmm. And so we train folks to think about, you know, if you notice a friend that posts something on a wall or tweets something that just doesn't quite sit right with you, you know, take advantage of the opportunity to reach out to them, text, phone call, you know, social media message, whatever it is. Find out how they're doing. Ask them about it. Even if you misdiagnose the problem, even if they're not actually suicidal, you're still communicating to that person that you are willing to talk about this taboo issue and that you're someone they could turn to if things ever change for them.
I would agree with that. The idea that we're allowing people to have this conversation, and we tell teachers and parents all the time, if you ask that question, the worst thing that will happen is someone say, oh, no, that's not what I'm going through. But thanks for checking in. And so the best case scenario is you're identifying someone who's at risk and opening a door for them to be able to talk to. And you can almost see it visibly, the weight coming off their shoulders when you ask them that question, are you thinking of suicide? Is this something you've struggled with? And if you do that in a sensitive, effective way that, like Matt's program does, training them to practice this, to get comfortable with it a little bit more, you can make a huge difference in a young person's life. Or in an old person as well.
Anyone's life who's considering
Absolutely.
It. Well, I want to thank you both for joining us today. Dr. John Ackerman, clinical psychologist and behavioral health and suicide prevention coordinator for the Center for Suicide Prevention and Research at Nationwide Children's Hospital. I appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ann.
And Dr. Matthew Fullen, licensed professional clinical counselor and program manager at the Ohio State University Suicide Prevention Program. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you, Ann.
And thanks to Kyle McKinnon for producing this show. Good job. And thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.